Let us begin. We finished the last week the discussion of shlakos, of vegetables that are cooked. Oh, let me turn the video on here. That would be bad. And so now, before we go on to the next topic, the next piece in the Gemara, we have to go back and deal with one particular issue that was raised with the story with Rabbi Yochanan. And the story with Rabbi Yochanan was cited, it was cited by our sugya in order to demonstrate that Rabbi Yochanan held that when you take a vegetable, although it wasn't a vegetable, it was a fruit. I don't think of olives exactly as a fruit, but they are a fruit, undoubtedly. I only don't think of them that way because they don't, you know, almost all fruits that I know of are sweet. And olives, you know, whether or not you eat them raw, which they're almost inedible, or you pickle them, then sweet is not a food. It's not something you associate with olives. It's fair to say olives have no sugar content in them, no natural sugar content in them. So, I think so, as far as I know. So, but nonetheless, the Gemara invokes Rabbi Yochanan eating a zayis maliach, a salted olive, and since salting is like cooking, or maliach karoteach and kavosh kemavushal, therefore, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan made a buri pri ha'etz on the olive tells you that even though you cook it, or even though you pickle a fruit or vegetable, it doesn't lose its bracha. And it happens to be in the case of olives, as we, the maskan of the Shulchan Aruch is, if you have something that is not eaten normally one way or the other, you do not make the buri pri dema, the buri pri ha'etz in the abnormal way. If you have a dual-use fruit or vegetable, then you make the buri pri dema, buri pri ha'etz either way. So the bottom line is from the story of Rabbi Yochanan's story, of course, if he ate the Zayas Maliach, he made a buri pri ha'etz, because had the Zayas not been Maliach, he would not have made ha'etz on it. He would have probably made shahakol if he was deciding to eat it somehow. So in the course of that story, the Gemara asked the question on the bottom. Rav Yirmiya asked Rav Zeira, how could Rav Yochanan make a bracha on the Zayas Maliach? The Gemara, the story was that he made a bracha before and after. And the Gemara was trying to prove what bracha he made before and after. And the Gemara said, obviously, it must have been he made ha'etz on it before, and therefore, since it was ha'etz before, he made ala etz ve'al pri etz afterwards, mein shalosh, because if he made shahakol before, then there would have been no bracha achrona. So the Gemara says, what do you mean no bracha achrona? It's bar nefashos. That's how the Gemara concluded. At the end of the day, we accept the fact that Rabbi Yochanan made a bari pri etz, and that afterwards he made a bracha achas mein shalosh. But the question Rav Yirmiya asked Rav Zeira is, how did Rabbi Yochanan make a bracha? The way he says, Heichi mevarech azayis maliach, keben the shkila ligarine, since its pit had been taken, batzar la shi'ura.
He turned into that question. He's saying that if the pit was not taken, then would have been, you don't eat the pit anyway. It's not edible.
Hold on. The Gemara could just be read, since the pit doesn't count, it's as if the pit is taken.
Right.
Or it's possible that if you swallow it with the pit, then it's really batel etzel the olive, and therefore it's part of the volume of that which you actually consumed. So, Amar Lei, the response that Rabbi Zeira gave to Rabbi Yirmiya was, on the top of Lamed Tesan Aleph, Misarvis Kazayas Gadol Be'inam. You don't need a Kazayas Gadol for Shir for Bracha, but rather Kazayas Be'inam Iba'inam. You only need an average Kazayas. And Vahu Da'isu Lekan Da'ryoch and Zayas Gadol Haba. That was a big olive. So the Afal Gav, the Shakla, Ligarinuse, Pashle Shira. Even though you remove the pit, there was still enough of a shear left to have a Kazayas. You know what the shear of a Kazayas is? Take an olive. That's the shear of Kazayas.
I mean, you can, any fruit you can start out to be, because of these interstitial space between the fibers of the fruit. I mean, if you pound it, you may turn it into a mush that's actually less. In other words, maybe you need to count the entire structure as being.
So we assume unless something is puffed up, we don't compress it. We assume that it's natural volume.
Puffed up artificially.
So obviously, any olive you take, if you could compress an olive, certainly,
right,
to some degree, and it would be less than an olive.
Right.
But that's, we don't say that that's
right,
less
that,
than.
So, but that's that space inside.
No, that's a big big pocket of air, right? You don't
but
have to crush.
Made, but that's the way it's made.
No, it's not made that way. It's made with a pit in it.
That's why it's eaten. Okay.
Right? If you push the pit out, you have a nice big hollow in it that's not natural in the sense that, right? That's empty. Like there's always if this clear empty space that's nikartas. Obviously, with between the atoms there's space. We don't count that. But something that would be clearly detectable to the eye, either because you can see it or because you could just take the olive without having to squeeze it, and you realize it's less than it without the pit. That's less than the shear of his eyes. That's what the
assumption. So the outer contours of the fruit, the outer contours.
Not of the when you have an artificial pocket of air inside. That's the assumption the Gemara is making. Now, the first question, which I'm not going to explore in great length other than to make an observation, is, but it only becomes apparent when the Rishonim go out of their way to insist about this, which is the Gemara, what bracha should Rabbi Yochanan have not made if there was no shear? Well, you already know the answer to the question, Josh. You know that no matter what you, how small the shear is, because we've said it already, no matter how small the shear is, you have to make a bracha rishona. It's only a bracha achrona that requires a shear. We will look in the psak of the Shulchan Aruch because it's part of this discussion. If you dig a little bit in the Rishonim, we'll see one example of it. Although I don't know if it's an printer's error, you know, or Toh Sofer, or if it's actually real. Sometimes Rishonim discuss the possibility that if you don't have a shear, it changes the bracha Rishona. But nobody, as far as I know, says that there's no bracha Rishona. Now, but what's interesting, the reason why you look at the Ravid, for example, the Ravid will be absolutely insistent about, of course, you always make a bracha Rishona, no matter what, is because the Gemara itself is not explicit. When it asked the question about Rabbi Zeira, when Yirmi asked the question about Rabbi Zeira, how can you be Mevarech Hazayas Maleach if you took away the pit, it's missing a shear? He didn't say explicitly that it was the bracha achrona only that he was asking about. And by the way, there was a halacha that we had learned a while back in the Masech, I think it's on Daf Yudalid, about a matemes, someone who's tasting. This is different shittos in Rishonim, but a matemes doesn't require a bracha. And according to some shittos, the matemes is swallowing the food that they're tasting. And the rule is it has to be less than a kazayas or revias, and someone who's only doing it for the purposes of tima doesn't have to make a bracha. And there, you don't even make a bracha Rishonim. So it's not a given. It's not a given that explicitly in the Gemara that there must be a bracha Rishona. More than that, and here I don't remember because I didn't look up the Mishnah. I forget which one of the Rishonim quoted it. There's a question that is raised by the Rishonim, and I believe it goes as follows. I'm not going to pull up the Mishnah now. Let me pull up the Mishnah. Indulge me for a second. I should have pulled it up before. The Mishnah in Chulin, in the second parak, has an interesting digression. No, it's not on the source sheet there. I'm going to read the Mishnah to you. It's very brief. It's actually the Gemara I need, but let me. Mishnah is in Kachin, in Chulin, in the second parak. Let me first look at it. I have to find the Gemara for you. I can't even read it at this distance. All right. Okay, so the Mishnah says the following. No, it's not. It won't help. It's at the end of the first parak. Did I make a mistake? Yeah, here it is. Okay, we're good. So the Mishnah says, and I got to find the Mishnah, that, oh no, it's not here. It must be. Is it in the second perk? I hope I'm not. It's the Mishnahs that talk about anything which requires this, requires that. Oh, it's the wrong place, probably. I think it might be the Mishnah's in Nida. There are two sets of Gemaras. I won't take a long time to find this. But the Mishnah basically says the following, as I'm going to try to pull it up. Anything that requires a bracha afterward requires a bracha before. But there are things that require a bracha before that don't require a bracha afterwards. That's the basic principle. So, is it here at the end of the third parak? No, end of the fifth parak. There are other very important themes in there. Where is that? Okay. All right. So now I see the Mishnah is here. You said Nun Aleph on the base?
Yeah.
Let me pull it up there because I see the Mishnah already.
Safaria is the replacement of Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik.
There's no replacement on so many levels in that particular context. Okay. Nun Aleph on the base.
Rav Lichtenstein sitting alongside the board. With his hand on the edge of the board, and the Rebbe be looking around, and the Rambam's up, and he's mishing around in the Rambam, and he finally says, "Aaron, who is the Rambam?" And Rambam, he says, Hilchas Malacha and Perek Dalet Halacha Gimel.
There you go. So the Gemara said, the Mishnah says the following: Kol Tan Bracha La'Acharav, Tan Bracha Lefanav. V'yesha Tan Bracha Lefanav, Ein Tan Bracha La'Achar. So that we said, if it requires a Bracha Achrona, it definitely has a Bracha Rishona. But the things that have a Bracha Rishona, then a Bracha Achrona. So what would it be? So where it first says to include vegetables. Now you're going to say, wait a second, of course we make a Bracha Achrona on vegetables. We do, but not all the Amorayim did. Because Bar Nefashos wasn't made as a Bracha Achrona in the earlier generations on Amorayim. So the Gemara says, okay, and according to Rabbi Yitzchak, who did make a Bracha on Yerek, what would the Mishnah include? Water. And because water you didn't make a Bracha Achrona. Then Rav Papa, who said you make a Bracha Achrona even water, to include what? To include mitzvahs. In other words, you make a Bracha of Al Mitilas Lulav, you don't make a Bracha afterwards. You make a bracha on, I want to say, achilas matzah. You don't make a bracha on mitzvah afterwards. And then the Gemara asks, but in Eretz Yisrael, where they used to make a bracha when they took off their tefillin, what would that include? Because you see, you do have bracha on mitzvah that you make a bracha afterwards. The Gemara says to include rechani, besamim, borim and besamim. There's no bracha achrona on that. Which is interesting to note. But we don't make a bracha achrona on the other kinds of, you know, it's a bracha sanen, but you don't make a bracha achrona. So the question that the Rishonim will ask you is, isn't there an obvious answer here? Why did the Gemara just say, if you didn't have a shear? Now that would suggest that, in fact, if you don't have a shear, not only do you not make a bracha achrona, you don't make a bracha rishona, otherwise that would have been the answer to the Gemara's question. So when you put all this together, it's not immediately apparent that if you have less than a shear, that you don't make a, that you make a bracha rishona. It happens to be, you do make a bracha rishona. What do you do with the Mishnah and the Gemara Nida that we just read? The answer is the Mishnah is talking about minim. It's talking about species things, not a situation-specific case. In other words, if I have bread, bread has a bracha rishona, bread has a bracha achrona. What if I'm eating less than a kazayis of bread? Okay, so in that circumstance, I'm only going to make a bracha rishona. But it's not that bread only has a bracha rishona, not a bracha achrona. So that's how they would answer that question. In our Gemara, you would have to say that the question that Rabbi Zeir was asking Rav Yirmiyah is how was he mevarech al zayis maliach refers to the bracha afterwards, not the bracha before. Which is fine. That's what all the rishonim, as far as I know, say. But, as I mentioned before, an echo of this remains in the fact that there are cases, and we'll see one, where you might make a different bracha rishona, according to some rishonim, on a food, than you would have made when you have less than a shear, as opposed to when you have a full shear. Isaac?
Of a shear, what's the concept of having a shear? Where did that develop?
So, generally speaking, when we talk about achila, which is necessary, when the Torah talks about achila, like you're not allowed to eat nevela, you're not allowed to eat dam. So the assumption is that achila, the way almost everybody rules, we're going to explore perhaps the marginal exception. Achila implies not just that I have any amount, there's got to be something that, you know, that defines a line. What's that?
If you taste something, why wouldn't that be a shear?
So for starters...
Enjoying the taste.
For starters, it's a good question. So I would start with the following observation, which is, if you talk about, if there is no shear, then it is likely that we are eating stuff prohibited all the time, right? It's inconceivable that, you know, you're going to have some tiny thing you don't even notice that you have. A bug. Well, we have to talk about bugs, actually. That's one that gets interesting. I can make a different argument, which is that they're in Biblical Hebrew, you do have a concept of ti'ima. It exists. Where Yonasan dips his rod in the Yaras of Dvash, and he talks about being toy, not being ochel. Although, interesting, I don't remember what Shaul's curse was. Was it anybody who would eat something, or anybody who would toy something? But the word ti'ima is used there, not achila. Right. So if, in fact, you want to argue, you could argue from the Biblical Hebrew that if you have a word for te'ima, which means to taste something, achila is something different. Achila implies a consumption. And a consumption means there has to be something
there.
That's for a lot of purposes. Maybe for a hanat sechet. So that once you accept that, Once you accept that sin, then it's easy. Because for bracha achrona, the source we have in the Torah is the achal tava sevata, which makes sense also. It makes logical sense that the reason I have to give bracha afterwards is because I've done something. If I had a kazayas or something, okay, very nice. The reason you have to make a bracha rishonim, the rishonim say, is because it's asa la'adam lehanas ba'alav zebli bracha, you're a gaslan. So there, it doesn't matter. Even less than a shava pruta is gezela. You may have to be chayav in tashlum when it's less than a shava pruta, but nonetheless, it's prohibited. So that's the rationale we understand very well. But that why achila why kazayas is required or shir is required for the bracha achrona, but not for the bracha rishon. It does make sense, but it starts with I think the fact that achila in achila posumi kazayas is the expression the Gemara uses.
What was the example you were going to give on something that if it's less than a kazayas or less than a shir, you say one bracha, and if it's more, you say?
So I think that there are those who say on bread. I don't remember which one of the rishonim says that when it comes to bread, you might not make hamotzi. If you don't have a shir kazayis.
What do you say?
I think of mizonos, like you would make on Passover the kisser, if I'm not mistaken. Rabbeinu Yonah is going to say something very odd. It's not clear why he says that. We'll see it when we look at Rabbeinu Yonah on this. Very, very odd. But so you have such ideas that float around, enough that most Rishonim have to push back and say, it's the same bracha.
If you've lost your sense of taste and smell, there's no hana. You're eating the food just to say it alive, you're not really, there's no hana.
That's an interesting question. I suspect we would say it's a low plug. Let me. What's that?
Even if you don't taste.
But his argument would be that.
No, you get hunger.
Yeah.
But let's say.
From a feeding tube in your stomach, you make a bracha.
No, but that's not achila anymore. Achila. So one of the things I'll just point as a separate discussion. Let me give you the following question. The Gemara asks. So I couldn't come up with this on my own. Supposing a person eats half a kazayas of nevela. And immediately regurgitates it, and so it's not inedible. I mean, I know it sounds a little, but really nothing has changed. If you rinse it off, nobody would know, and give it to someone, nobody would know. And then they swallow it again. Have they eaten a shir or not? The Gemara wants to know. And the Gemara, I think, way in the part of Gidan Asher Rabbi Lichtstein that you don't have to bother to do when we're doing your day. You know, you don't do the beginning because that's Gidan Asher. Nobody deals Gidan Asher. Then you have the four blot that talk about Gidshin Yerach Nispashabal Gid, all the cooking, and then the last few blot deal with Enis or Chal Alisser. So I think it's on the last Amut. You know, people more likely do Kol Abasser starting the next parak. They see part of them, but I think it's on the last Amut, the last Daf. The Gemara's question, I think, is whether it's Hanas Meayim or Hanas Garon. Is it the hana of the throat or the hana of the stomach? If it's hana of the throat, then you'd be chayiv because your throat enjoyed two kazayas. But if it's hana as meayim, well, your stomach never had more than half a kazayas in it. So if you want to think about that question, Sam, you know, I don't know if that is connected to this at all. But if it's hana as meayim, and I don't remember how we pass it, if it's hana as meayim, then certainly the answer is there is considered hana. You are filling your stomach in some way. But I suspect the answer, real answer is that they didn't make exceptions for this type of a situation. Okay, so let's now put that question aside. The assumption is that you make a bracha rishona no matter what, no matter how much you're having. Assuming it's not tasting the food for the purpose of tasting. Again, that's a question of whether you're swallowing or spitting out. But assuming you're doing it to eat, but you're having less than all that was left on the table is this the delicious half a zayas, and you want to have it, so you make a bracha kreitz and you don't make a bracha achrona. Now the question would be, and it sounds from the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan would have he made a bracha achrona because he actually had a big olive. He had a jumbo olive, and a jumbo olive, when you take the pit out, is the size at least of a normal olive. And since it's the size, the full volume of a normal olive with its pit, therefore you make a bracha achrona. Now there is a Yerushalmi here, and before we look at the Yerushalmi, this is on the source sheet now. There is a Mishnah in Machlis. The Mishnah says that Kama Yochal Min HaTevel V'Yehei Chayev. How much, if Tevel is produce that was untithed, you haven't separated Trumas and Maisus from it, let's pretend we're in Eretz Yisrael, and we're dealing with, let's say, wheat, or wine, or olive oil, so it's Tevel D'Oraisa. And there's Ban Shemei Samikdash Kayim, and all 12 Shvatim are in their proper locations, and so on. So, no question, we're dealing with an Issa D'Oraisa here of Tevel, of untithed produce. And how much do you have to eat to be Chayitz? Rabbi Shimon says, Kol Shehu. Rachachamim Omim Kizayis. Chacham say, no, you need to be Kizayis at Tevel. Amar Lehen Rabbi Shimon, Iyata Modem Li Ba'ochal Namala Kol Shehu Shuchayit. Would you not agree with me that if you ate one ant, you would be liable for Malkos for eating shkatzim or masim, whatever it is that you're eating? Amrulo, they said, Mitmei Shehi Kibiryasa, because it's a beria, it's a full creation. Amar Lahen, Afchita Achas Kibiryasa, even one wheat kernel is Kibiryasa. The Chachamim don't agree, they don't think that's called a beria. The way we typically define a beria is, the starting point is it's a living creature, it has to be whole. That's the starting point to define a beria. There may be some other criteria that are necessary, but fundamentally, because there are things that are beyond whole animals that are considered beria. I think one of the definitions that the Rishon would give is that if mi'chalek ein shmo alad, if it gets divided in two, it is no longer retains the same shame. And they talk about chelev. Don't have a chelev, which is part of a living creature. We take all the chelev. So the reason why chelev is not a beria, if you took the whole thing, is because if you cut the chelev in half, what would you have? You'd have chelev. Whereas if you take an ant and you cut it in half, you have half an ant. You don't have an ant. You wouldn't refer to it as such. So, with that delicious thought, Adrian, the Chachamim's position is that even though normally to violate Torah law to get malchus, you have to have a kezias, if it is a beria, then it is aser. We've probably spoken about this in the past, but the whole to-do about the water in New York City has to do with the fact that beria, this is the Rabbanon, a beria is not betela. Normally, that old joke about what's the only thing worse than finding a worm in an apple is finding a half worm in an apple, but from a halachic perspective, that's not true. It's much better finding a half worm in an apple, because a half a worm can be batel, because it's not a berry anymore, because it's not shlema. However, a full worm is a beria. So the concern is when you have, that's a yes. No one ever has inverted that joke before. So,
isn't it the assumption that you've already eaten the other half?
But at this particular point, but you didn't eat a whole worm either, so. In order to be chayiv, you have to eat the whole thing. And you have to eat it not b'karoves, actually. I'm having a fun with that apple, but the real situation comes up, let's say you're having a salad and you don't see a bug there. So midoraisa, because you don't see it distinctively and it's not eaten separately, it's bato midoraisa, either b'shishim or even less than shishim. That's machlokas. But the Shulchan Aruch assumes that that bugs have no tam l'shvach. So nobody likes to eat bugs, which is at least in our culture probably true, not in every culture. Therefore, you don't even need shishim technically. If you ground the bug up, according to the Shulchan Aruch, if we're broken up and ground up, you wouldn't even need shishim to be mevakalit. But putting that aside, when you're eating in the salad, you don't see the bugs, so midaraisa there's no prohibition because you're not eating b'matzmo, but they made gzeira midarabanan on that beria is not betela. It doesn't follow the regular rules. So whatever, that's an extended discussion about, how does that apply in this particular circumstance. I know personally, I think it was after your time in Yeshiva, the controversy. I don't remember, it's a long time. Were you around?
It was after my time.
Yeah, so I don't know, every time I would look at a cup of water, I couldn't find the copepods. So anyway, be that as it may, that's where that issue stems from. It's that's a din d'rabbanan about bittul, which stems from the fact that midoraisa, you eat a beria even though it's less than a kezias. If the thing is whole, then you would get malchus if you did it intentionally. So we have this din that operates on a d'oraisa level of beria having a special kind of what we call hashivos, if that's not a redundancy. It is considered to have such significance because it's a whole living being that even though the shear is less than a kezias, you're chayiv when you eat it. Okay. Now, we saw the story in the Bavli. Our story was Rabbi Yochanan did something and then Rabbi Yirmiyah was asking him a question. The Yerushalmi has a similar story. It's the same story, obviously, but slightly different presentation. It says the following. Rabbi Yochanan Nisav Zesa. Rabbi Yochanan took an olive, ubirech lefanaf ula'achara, and he made a bracha before and after it. Vahava Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, who was a Babylonian, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Shimon bar Abba, often found in the Bavli as Rabbi Shimon bar Abba, the ayin disappears. So Chiya bar Abba, have a mistakaba, he was looking at him, he was staring at him. So Amar le Rabbi Yochanan, Bavloya, Babylonian, lama at mistakabi. That kind of reminds me. Remember my Rebbe, Rabbi Dulitz, so we had one student in the shir who was from Binghamton, New York. So he used to call him Binghamton. That was what Rabbi Dulitz would refer to him, Binghamton. So Rabbi Yochanan looks at him and says, Babylonian, what are you looking at? What are you looking at? Let me talk to me. What are you staring at me for? Leslach koshin mimin shiva tod bracha fanacharav. You never heard the din? That's something. It's mimin shiva. It's one of the shivas aminim. It requires a bracha before and afterwards. So no, the Gemara says, Islay. Of course he had that principle. Umatzri chavai, what was bothering? What was his question? Mimnesha galinaso mimatatu. Because the pit of the olive reduced the volume, so he wasn't eating a kezias. He was eating a zayas, but he wasn't eating a kezias. So the Yerushalmi says, okay, and the lesle Rabbi Yochanan shegalinato mimatatu. Did Rabbi Yochanan not actually hold to the principle that the galin, by the way, I didn't comment, garin and galin are the same thing. The ration and laman are both liquid consonants, they switch frequently. And if you don't grow up hearing them distinguished, you will not be able to hear it later in life, and hence, I think like Koreans can't hear the difference between an R and an L. Because if you don't pick it up at a certain stage, your ear just doesn't hear it. So, or I always like to say my wife's grandfather, Zichrono Livracha, he had two of his children, one's named Harry, one's named Elliot, and when he would pronounce the names, I couldn't hear the difference between them. Because the H was weak, and if you look at the rest of the name, it's the same name, two L's and two R's, it doesn't sound any different. So that was one of the things that drove this home for me. So anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan the Yerushalmi says, doesn't hold of the principle that the Garin reduces the volume, and therefore you don't have gezias. So, my Ovid Bey Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Beria. You know why Rabbi Yochanan made a bracha Rishona Nachrona on this olive, even though the pit reduced the volume? Because an olive is a beria, and therefore it has chashivos, and therefore it gets its own bracha. And the Yerushalmi then says that Milsa de Rabbi Yochanan Amra, this story, this matter of Rabbi Yochanan, tells us, we might say Zosomeres, Shekain afilu achal preda achashel anav, o preda achashel rimon, shilton racha lefanel achara. I don't know what a preda achashel rimon is. A preda achashel anav or anav is one grape. You eat one grape. And you eat a small grape, certainly. Some grapes might be as big as an olive, but you eat a small grape, it's certainly less than an olive, but you have to make a bracha on it because it's considered a beria. I don't know what a preda shel rimon, I mean, it's like, I assume it's not an entire pomegranate, because any pomegranate is getting bigger, unless it means literally maybe a pomegranate seed, one seed. Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Bracha achrona, right?
Bracha achrona. The Yerushalmi is not explicit. The Yerushalmi is not explicit. So you can't, once again, the same, because it says, Shutam bracha lefanel achara. Right? Again, if you read these two stories and you had no other data in the Bavli, or if you didn't read the Yerushalmi, you might have assumed that less than a shear has no bracha. Not only afterwards, but you wouldn't have a bracha before either. So that's off the table in our discussion. It's clear everybody assumes that, but it's not so explicit. That's why the Rishonim have to make a big deal about this. Okay. So obviously, you realize that there's a machlokas between the Bavli and the Rishonim, or so it would appear. Certainly, in terms of understanding the story, there's a difference. And the question is, will there be a difference in dins? Before I want to first read our Tosis. Tosis, actually, it's a really fun Tosis because you got a lot of important things in it, some of which are unrelated, but one of which is going to be, the main one which is going to be the discussion of this. So Tosis is on Daf Lamed Tesam et al. And Tosis says the following. Botzar le shi'ura. Firstly, Tosis says, Hainu dafka bibracha shela acharav, debi'inan shir, avo bibracha shela funav, afilu pachos bikashir. Tosa says the whole discussion in the Gemara is only about bracha chrona, not about bracha rishona. Why? The asal lehenus ba'olam hazeh below bracha. You're not allowed to get any henna without a bracha. Bein le'inyan achila, bein le'inyan shtia. Avo b'bracha shel achar b'inyan shir melo lugmav. Now, I don't know, this Tosas I cannot make any sense of. Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass them as well. I'll explain in a second. Afterwards, you need a melo lugmav. Al ken yesh lizari l'shtos mikosho bracha melo lugmav. This is not true in Shulchan Aruch. The shear for Mayim is the Revius. It's explicit in Shulchan Aruch. It's explicit in many sources that a Melo Lugmav is less than a Revius, which means drinking a Melo Lugmav of the Kosher Bracha does not get a Bracha Achrona. Correct. It's less than a Revius. I think it's one cheek. At least by Yom Kippur we say that, if you push it off to one side. But if it's explicit in Shulchan Aruch, it's less than a Revius. And I think it would be for most of us. I don't think you'd get 3 ounces in one, certainly in half your mouth. Two halves of your mouth, you could hold 3 ounces.
So does the Melo Lugmav have a shear, in other words?
It's by each person. By each person. Og Melech HaBashan's Melo Lugmav would be a Revius. That's a Gemara. The Gemara in Yoma talks about that question. Why is it that by Yom Kippur, the Shir Achila is Kichoseves Agasa, you know, a fat date, which is fixed for everybody, as opposed to Shtia, which is Melo Lugmav, which it all depends upon the person. But for normal people, Melo Lugmav is less than a Revius. And therefore, there is a din. There is a din that you need to drink malolugmav. A kosher bracha is supposed to have malolugmav drunken collectively. But I don't know. I didn't go looking in Hilchos. I'm not sure where, if it's in Shabbos. I don't know that we require. There's no inyan of having a bracha achrona required, right? Like on Shabbos when we have a malolugma from Kiddush, you spread it out to various people. So I don't think this. I don't know if this tosis is accepted at all. But I certainly don't understand because the shear of bracha achrona is a revius, which not a malolugma. Malolugma is less than a revius.
So how does malolugma and rov revius conflict in terms of
those are going to be in the same ballpark, I think. And the Malolugmav is going to be, I think it will be a Rov Revius. Normally. Right? If a Revius, I'm working with, you know, if you're interested, I'm not giving Shira on this topic, but if you look, I can give you the Mari Makom, the Mishnah Berurah starts to quote all the Noda Behuda who revisited the Shira. It's in the Bir Halacha and the Mishnah Berurah on, I can give you the Semet. I forget which one. It's either one in Brachos or in Shabbos. And it's not true. The Shirim are correct. The 3 ounces is really the correct Shir. So a Malolugmav is probably a rope of that, easily. Okay, so this is one point in Tosus that I don't understand. Okay. V'hari haya omer b'borin nefashos kevin d'la bracha chashuvahi afilu b'batzer mishira m'verchina borin nefashos rabos. So the Ri had a wild chiddush, and we don't hold of this, that to make a bari nefashos, you don't need to have a shear. Because it's not a bracha chashuva. So you had an ounce of water, you had an ounce of schnapps. There's a Taz, I think, who says that an ounce of schnapps might require bracha achrona, because that's what people normally drink, but I think the other achrona disagree. But the Ri would have said, yes, you have an ounce of schnapps, you can make a bari nefashos afterwards, because bari nefashos is not such a bracha chashuva. Tosa says, however, since bar nefashos basically becomes the substitute bracha achrona, therefore, okay, so that's another very important thing, but we assume that you require shir even for bar nefashos. Okay. Now, here's where he gets to the Yushalmi and our Gemara. Ubi Yushalmi, Rabbi Yochanan Hechi Baruch Hazayis, Halo Havashira. The Ka'amar, not like we say in our Gemara, Mishum Beria. The Afilo Achal al Preda Achashal Enav, O Preda Achashal Ribon Boy Beruche, Mishum de Beria Mavarchen, Afilo Pachas Bikazayas. The Cholek al Gemara Didan, Kidamash Mahacha. It sounds like for our Gemara, if the Gemara held that way, it could have given that answer. In Cain, Ein Halacha Kemoso Shay Yerushalmi. So, which case, we don't pass that Yerushalmi, and therefore, if you want to eat one grape, don't worry about it. It's just fine.
Unless it's a huge grape.
Well, no, and which is that's also fine if it's a kazayis. It's a kazayis. The problem you're going to run into is, let's say you don't have a kazayis of value, but it's a beria. That's what's going to fall into the gray area. That's right now the machlokas bavli and Yerushalmi.
No, but he's saying you don't pass them like that.
So far, the Yerushalmi ainu cholik al gemar shalanu. The hachamayri shehusru hagarinim. Hagarin v'nimlach, the way he frames it is that the pit was removed and then it was salted in the Bavli. The garin was removed. Now the way he describes it is because you're salting. Now my guess would be, I'm not sure. Like the Tosas insist that you must remove the pit first before you salt it, because what would happen if you remove the pit after you salted it? Would that make the din different? Would that be what salting it makes the food edible? So the question is that if you make it edible with the pit inside, does that mean all of a sudden if you eat it now, you would be make a bracha? But it's only because by the time you turned it into a food, it wasn't a kazayis. I don't know. He doesn't elaborate. Im kein lo haya kiber yaso. It wasn't kiber yaso because it didn't have the pit. Avalam achalo shalim. If you ate something whole being with the pit in it. Afilum haya preda achas of shawima mevarecha of tchila v'sof. In other words, over Yerushalmi, and Rabbi Yochanan ate the entire thing. I don't mean he swallowed the pit, he spit out the pit, but when he ate it first, when he put it in his mouth, it had the pit in it. And therefore, the machlokes is about the story, not a machlokes about the din. And in our Gemara, the assumption was he didn't have the pit in it. And therefore, the only way to get to a shear is to have a big olive. V'lachein hutzrach latareitz ba'oso inyan. The Ochal Preda, the Beria, Enam Cholkim Yachad. So there is no machlokes between the Bavli and Yerushalmi, which now means we have a problem, Houston. Because if you hold like the first approach in Tosos, you eat one grape, you don't make a bracha achrona. If you hold like the second approach, you do. Which means now, you probably shouldn't eat one grape, because if you eat one grape, now you have a suffix of what to do. So you have to have at least two grapes, but you can't have two grapes only because you can't have zugos. Therefore, you have to have three grapes. You know the Gemara of Sachem, Arvei Tachem, the part that nobody learns. You don't do things in twos, even numbers, because the Shadim are Sholeit. Don't worry, the Maskan of the Gemara, one of the Amorayim says, the Kapin Makpidim Bey, the Lo Kapin Lo Makpidim Bey. So, but there are, I'm sure that there are people, Ariyom Azeh, who try to avoid Zugos. Okay, it's probably not too many in the KJ community, is my bet.
Not whole like the
I would say not even in the TNEC community, but I've seen the resurgence of things in the TNEC community over the last couple of decades that makes me wonder how far behind we are in Zugos. So anyway, but bottom line is, so we will have three grapes to make sure that A, we have a kezias and shear, and B, we don't have an even number of grapes.
What's the source of the Zugos?
You have to look at that Gemara. It's the source, even though I might have trouble saying, is probably Persian demonology, is my guess for the source. So it's explicitly Shadim related. It's not that's not my Kaddish.
Someone's asking a question.
Yes. Hold on one second, because the volume is so low. Hold on. Go ahead.
I did when I learned all this stuff, we did do that section.
Okay, I'm fairly certain that in most yeshiva elementary schools, if they do Arei Pesachim, they do not do that part of the parak. So it's around like Daf Kufyud Aleph, Kufyud Beis, or something like that. So, okay.
Yes.
It is not my recommendation, if you're learning Pesachim, unless you're doing it to make a Siyum, it's not that important to do the Zugos. But okay, others would disagree. All right, so now, so basically we're left with a situation where you could wind up with problems if you only eat one particular thing that's a beria. Okay, so in the, in Rabbeinu Yonah, and this may be a little bit repetitive, but it's a little bit sharper, if you go to the sixth line, he says, Vinire, the middle of the sixth line. Did the source sheet, was the link sent out to the source sheet? Okay, so all you need to do is go on to my website, go on to vayavinu.com, go to Shiurim, go to Brachos, and I posted the source sheet is right there. So I posted it this morning, so you can download the source sheet. I sent a link to our executive director, but I guess he has been busy, so he probably didn't see it. Okay. All right, so Rabbeinu Yonah, or to the back of your Gemara, he says, "V'nira shatalmud shalanu cholikem ayushalmi." The Hacha Mashma.
I have a different Nira. Oh, yeah.
Sixth line. I'm sixth line. "V'nira shatalmud shalanu cholikem ayushalmi." Our Gemara argues with Yushalmi. The Hacha Mashma shafal gav shachal beria b'fnei atzmo imupachos mikazayis inem avarach la'acharav. Sharei anu omrim shemitnei shayazaz ayin shachal gadol b'hayi boshir b'erach la'acharav. It's because our Gemara says because he had a big olive that he ate. Oh, but had it been, ahaim hayas ayis katal hayim b'varach la'acharav. Apal pishu beria, uvi yushalmi mashmash emu beria apal pishu emu kazayis b'varach la'acharav. Damrinan hasam. It sounds like even if you don't have a kazayis, a beria you make a bracha chona. Uma abid le Rav Yochanan mishum beria. Milser Rav Yochanan amash shaken up yidu preda achashalina preda shurimon shituna bracha chona la'acharav. Inesha yushalmi sober the Rav Yochanan lo ayri b'zayis gadol b'zayis acher.
Now, there's a little different than Tosas. She'im hu davar she'ein derech la'ochlo im hagarin, kigon zayis v'chayotze bo, she'tzorech she'yi bo shir milvad hagarin. Rabbeinu Yonah says, if it's something that you normally do not eat the pit, and you normally don't eat the pit of an olive, then you need to have a shir, actually, of a kezayis, and excluding the pit. Shekevan she'ein derech la'ochlo im hagarin, Nimsa shalolam lo have beria. Since you don't normally eat it with the pit, and this would suggest, Sam, even if you swallow it with the pit, it wouldn't matter. So then, it would not be considered a beria. Shechetotzi agarin kemoshe derech lotziu lo yishar shalim. Umet mezeb, for that reason, hutzroch lomar betalmud shalanu de bezayis gadol askinan. It has a big olive.
Even if you remove the pit.
Right? Avalam hu davar shederech la'ochlo magarin shalo. If it's something you normally eat with its pit, kegon garin shalimon or garin shalanava, and I don't understand this, David, now, what are you eating with the pit? You know, when you're eating one seed. No, but
a little pit inside.
There's a little pit inside the seed? Okay, there you go. I'll let them learn. I thought that you just, I thought those were the seeds.
That little crunchy part that some people spit out and don't eat it, some people eat them.
Wow. That makes it, yeah, I don't know, somebody spit it out, that'd be bitter.
A little bitter, they're actually a little bitter.
Okay. Whatever works. So I was just going to say, David, Nishkanu Atvayim, they were Rimonim were different. They were great Rimonim. They had pits inside the seeds. I don't know. I assume it's something. No, some of you suggesting grapes are something. I mean, I don't know if they had yet seedless grapes, but certainly ours. We have. I think there are seeds in the grapes, but they're very little that you don't notice them. And people, because most people do spit out the seeds from seedless grapes, I think. But you could eat them. You could eat them whole also. So back then, I suppose they did. It's very time-consuming if you don't eat the seeds in the grapes. So if it's normal that you would eat it, like a garin I don't know. It's some type of a fruit, I presume. Im achal echad mehem, afal pishem bein einba, bein hakol kezayis, tainina laberia, umavarech l'acharav, kol ech asve'achas bracha ruyalo. Whatever the bracha for that food is, vegetable, fruit, and so on. Tim umishiva samina, mavarech bracha achas mein shalosh, tim udava acham, mavarech boina fashas rabos, avolim, eino beria, vein boshir, eino labarech l'acharav, bishum davar, shum bracha klal. You don't have a shir, you don't make any bracha at all. That's a rejection of the Ri's position about Bar Nefashas. So he's very clear, that's the accepted position. But here you have kind of a third opinion. Tosas suggests that it sounds like from Tosas you ate the olive with the pit, maybe we would agree. The Rainiona says that olive by definition don't count because any food that is not normally, that's not usually eaten with the pit, pit doesn't count. It's no longer beria. Cherries. Ah, thank you. Okay. Yes, I'm surprised nobody knew that for modern Hebrew, myself included. But
that's what they're called in modern Hebrew.
No,
they're
okay. Fine. So that would be one.
Do the other way. See what comes up.
That's what it is.
Do the vine. No, that's strawberry.
No, true tim or strawberries. Okay. I see. We need to have an ancillary Ulpan class here, for myself included. Okay. I wonder if those two words are somehow one got to the other. There's some overlap there. Okay. Now, the Shulchan Aruch paskins regarding this matter. Ha'ocho pachos mikazayis. Beimi pas, beimi shar ochon. Someone who eats less than a kazayis of bread or any food. Ha'shosa pachos mervias beim miayim, beimi shar mashkim. Mevarech p'chila, bracha ru'uya osamin. You make that bracha that you would have made. Ula acharein mevarech klal. Yesh mistapkim lomar shel davar shehu kiber yaso kegon gargir shel einav o shel rimon shel mevarchan la'acharav afo pisha ein bo kizayis. Lekach nachol nizar shel lo lecho beria pachs mi kizayis. So you should not eat one grape. You know, it's like you can know you have this chumrah in general. Like if they offer you one cookie, you can say, I have a chumrah that I don't eat less than three cookies because I want to make sure I have a shear. So the same.
They take a grape. They want to see if it's sweet or not. And they'll taste the grape. Is that considered eating, or is that just tasting?
That might. I mean, I think that's probably called te'ima. So then the only question is whether swallowing eliminates from the category of te'ima or not. But in that case, what you do is eat half a grape.
Who eats half a grape? No one does that.
Well, if you just need to take. Well, if your purpose is to taste it and you don't want to run into the stuffing.
What do you do with the other hand?
Yeah.
Give it to your kid.
Exactly. Okay.
For moms who do that
for
their
kids. Yeah, right.
Or you
peel it. Right. Yeah. Okay. So, and the Rama adds, avonlaka hagarin menu lo mikri beria. So this is kind of interesting because he writes, I don't think that's true. That's not what Rabbeinu Yonah said. That's really what Tosas said. In other words, only if you eat as is, but if you take the pit out, it's not called a beria. Everybody agrees to that, but Rabbeinu Yonah said something more than that. Rabbeinu Yonah said if it's the kind of thing that's normally eaten, where you don't eat the pit, you don't swallow the pit, it doesn't make a difference whether the pit is there or not. Rabbeinu said that's never called a beria. So Rabbeinu Yonah believes that according to the Bavli, an olive is definitionally never a beria. But what the Ramah is not saying that. The Ramah is saying that if you took the pit out of the olive, it's not a beria. But if the pit would be in the olive, that would be a beria. Right? He just says, so the Re, Rabbeinu Yonah, is not the source for that. That's really Tosfos. The Re would agree with this then. Rabbeinu would agree, but he actually went further than that. He would say that if it's something that normally is not eaten with a pit, then it doesn't matter whether you do or don't eat it with a pit, you don't make a bracha on it. It's not considered a barrier. Okay. The Yesh Mestapkim Od Bebracha Achrona Shoyayin and Mevarchan Oso Al Kizai. Well, I'll leave that aside. Okay. Fine. So that is, so now be forewarned, according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's ideal not to eat less than a shear, unless it's clearly less than a shear, meaning if it's not a beria. If it's less than a shear, it's fine, unless it's something that could be considered a beria, in which case one should eat more. Or break it in half, and then only eat half, or something like that. Okay. Any questions about this topic before we move on?
I don't think I understand this in the Tosfos, but in that question
of the Rishon. Oh, we didn't finish
Tosfos,
actually. Yes,
go ahead,
I'm sorry.
The Malo Luzman versus Rabi.
Yes.
There's a Rabbi Kiva Eger there. I don't understand it, but he cites that other Tosfos that you really liked about the...
Yes, at the beginning.
About the never-ending...
Yes.
You drink enough and you have to make a demon on the
right
wine, and you have to use a bracha. You have to make that demon on another cup of wine, and then you have to make another demon on that, and it never ends. So I'm not sure if this is what he's saying, but maybe he's saying that it can't be Revius because then that's Kavius.
Well, I think when you point to that Tosis, what you see from that Tosis, David, is that Tosis consistently assumes that Malo Lugumov demands a bracha chona, right? Because Tosis says that that once you make a Malo, you only have Malo Lugumov. Once you just have a malolol, the minimum shear, so he says, even for Rabbi Gamliel, you make a bracha chasmei shalosh, not a berachas mazir. But you see that a malolugmav requires a bracha chrona. That's Tosis is consistent. It's just not consistent with what we assume to be the halacha. We assume malolugmav is supposed to be drunken from a kosher bracha, and then we assume that you need a revius actually to make a bracha chrona. So I think Rekib Eger is just cross-referencing to the point that Tosis there makes the same assumption as he does here, that there's a bracha chrona on a malo logmav, and that is not the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins.
So is that assumption because he's trying to avoid this problem? In other
words, you mean you think, is he saying, is it being generated by this? It could be. In other words, Tosis is trying to accomplish two things there. Not really, though. I mean, Tosos solves two problems with that malolugmav there. One is to explain why you don't have to bench again. But two is also to explain, well, does Rabbi Gamaliel not hold up a bracha achas mein shalosh ever? I mean, the answer to that one could have been yes. The Tosos could not have answered the second question. The answer might have just been, Rabbi Gamaliel definitely doesn't believe in mein shalosh. He doesn't have such a thing. But the answer to the first question has to be there. It has to be that at some point you have to stop making berach samazer, because otherwise you'll be making berach samazer forever. So I don't know if that's really, if you may suggest that's really what motivated Tosfos.
Why can't it just be that Tosfos was before the Shulchan Aruch and just had a different...
Well, no, because I don't think, I think we assume throughout Shas that a Revius, I think the Gemara says by Nazir that a Revius that solidifies will be a Shir Kazayis. And that's assumed to be the minimum Shir for Achila and Vishtia. So I don't think the Gemara says, I believe it does say by Kosher Brachi, it's supposed to have Malolugmav, it doesn't say anything about a Bracha Achrona. And that's not a shear of achila, shtia. So that's what's very odd. I have to do a little more research to figure out where, you know, every time I look at this Tosis, it's like, and it's explicit, again, you're right, the Shulchan Aruch is not possibly like Tosis, and Tosis could have another opinion, but the problem is it seems to be really standardly assumed that Revius would be the shear.
And the low leg mug is considered to be 2 ounces?
I don't know if they put a shear on it.
I mean, Revius...
Revius is 3 ounces.
It's 3 ounces. The Lugmav, you had said, is a rove.
Probably rove Revius, yes. So, like, 2 ounces is probably. Like, everybody could do an experiment when you go home. What's that?
1.5.
Yes. You do it every... Yeah, it's homework for this year. Go home and measure what your Malol Lugmav is. Okay. Fine. The last piece in Tosis, which can come up, actually, he says the following. He says, Od v'yesh b'Yerushalmi, hecha debarach atramusa. Lemechle. You took a lupine to eat it.
What?
A lupine. It's this kind of pretty looking vegetable that you have to cook and cook and cook and cook to leach out the toxins, and then you can eat it.
Do we eat that today?
I don't. I'm not. I don't recall ever having eaten so, but I would not surprise A, if there are cultures that eat it, and B, you know, if you go into some food co-op in hip Brooklyn or something like that.
Lupine.
Lupine. L-U-P-I-N-E. I believe that the flower on it is like it's a purple, small purple flowers or something like that. And so if you go into one of these fancy places, you know, they'll probably, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's selling it. So the Yerushalmi says, if you had a tormus, v'nafal miyadeh, and it fell out of your hand. V'shakal achwina, and you took a different one. You're making a bracha, fell out of your hand in the middle, and it got lost, and you take another one, v'y bruches in achrite. You have to make another bracha. Uparich, in other words, and that's true. In other words, if you have you're eating a cookie, you dip your cookie and your Oreo into the milk, and you're about to eat it. You make a bar mitzvah mizonos, and then your household animal comes and swipes the cookie, and you had no other cookies there in front of you, and you go over to the pantry, take another Oreo. You have to make another bracha. So the Yerushalmi asks a question and says, "Uparech ma'ishname amasamayim." This would be like a water fountain. When you make a bracha on a water fountain, I mean, you could do it differently, but normally you start the water running, then you make the bracha. You don't make the bracha before you start the water running, for starters, because let's say it's not working and you made a bracha. Theoretically, you could start it, check it that it works, and then make a bracha, and then press it, so at least the bracha you're making on is the water that was right about to come out. But that's nice when you're dealing with a water fountain. If you're drinking out of a stream, and you don't have a cup to take it out, so you're going to make a bracha rishona, and then you're going to dip it and drink from the stream. The problem, of course, is that the water that was there when you made the bracha rishona is no longer there because it is now downstream. It's going to be very hard to catch it.
I guess you could do like David Stroop.
It was Gidon in Sefer Shoftim. And I'm trying to remember.
It was Gidon.
That was how God told him to purge the army, right? And he wound up with the 300 Hamalakakim. I think it was the ones who didn't bow, or something like that. That's because I learned in elementary school. They were picked because they were the ones who, I guess, I'm not sure exactly what the difference was, but one of them were bowing down and then taking the water, as opposed to those who would lie down and lick directly, something like that. So whatever it was, let's say the person doesn't do that way, they're just going to drink straight out of the river. So the Amas Samayim, the stream. So how can they do that? So the Yerushalmi says, it says, Vahani Azli, Vahani Achrininu. One set of the water has flown, and the rest of it is other water when you come to drink. No, the difference is when you made a bracha by the stream, your intent was about the water that was coming later, not the intent. You knew you were going to drink that. However, you had no idea that it fell out of his hands. And then Tosis tells us another important thing, which is Vyomar Baroshen Kol Machusol Obed. You shouldn't have a bracha levatala. Just in case, so at least you mentioned God's name, and now you didn't eat with that, so it shouldn't be in vain. So you have mentioned God's name, at least you say Baroshen Kol Machusol Obed, which is what they said in the Mikdash. This Tosfos, this idea, is the origin of a practice that most Ashkenazi men have but may not realize why they're doing it. Anybody know what I'm referring to? Say it. On tefillin. You should be careful, when you make the bracha on the shalrosh, do not say baruch shem kol malchus olamet until you put the tefillin on your head. After you put the tefillin on your head, you say baruch shem kol malchus olamet. Why? Because there's a big machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam on one side and the Balei Tosfos on the other. When the Gemara says that it has two brachas for the tefillin, so Svardim and Rashi also held that you only make the bracha of Al Mitzvah Tefillin on the Shalrosh if you interrupt it. You made a hesek, it's sach, in between the Shayad and the Shalrosh. So you made a laniach on the Shayad. So Rashi says if you don't interrupt, that bracha goes on both sets of tefillin. If you interrupt it,
you're rapping and you're saying like a different.
No, you don't. You notice you don't do that till after you put on the shalrosh.
So what, you put on the shalyat and then you put on shalosh and then you rap?
That's not how I do it.
Well, a couple things. The first thing, you don't say anything when you're rapping. So some of us, by the way, which is remote,
by saying, you know,
I'm not supposed to do that. You don't do anything about, you know, you do it on your ring, but erastichli olam, that you do afterwards.
Before, you're counting.
You're not speaking. You're just wrapping around.
Above a pasa to count. You don't.
No. That should not be done. Absolutely not. Okay, so we can always change things. What?
That's when you count a minion.
No. Hold on. Let me just firstly. I rarely daven here. Almost never daven here at Tfilin. But my minhag that I picked up very young from the Rav of my shul, who was a Talmud of Rav Moshe, is that when you put on the shoyad, after you tie it on, you just wrap it around to grab it with your hand a few times till it reaches. Then you put on the shel rosh. Then you made the bracha, you add to the shi'ishay bar shel masalat, and then you do it. And the reason Rav Moshe said was, this is already discussed in Shulchan Aruch, actually, about that being a hefsid. The minhag, most people, is to wrap it around, but the shear of the tefillin strap is supposed to be to reach your finger. So Rav Moshe, it was kind of a natsmach that he would just wrap it enough, and it got it to the finger, then put on the shel rosh, then pull back into the seven krichos, then put on your hands and say the three psukim. Okay, so that, I'm not, what's that?
I don't know. How does saying Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuto, how does that, what's the formula? How does it work? Is it making it not a vatala like you're...
It sounds like you mentioned God's name, so yeah. If the purpose was just to praise God, so somehow that's not levatala, right? It's not, nobody, as far as I know...
Rather than be specific.
I don't know that any posting anywhere ever suggests, as a general rule, that when you have a suffix of what bracha to make on something, whether you need to make a bracha, just make a bracha and say Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vayeh. Now, the fact that we do it by tefillin, really we hold Ashkenazim, you need two brachas on tefillin. But because there's a shita that says only one bracha, and it's a real shita, Rashi and the Rambam, therefore we'll say Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vayeh just to check all the boxes, just in case. If we really thought that it was an unnecessary bracha, we would say suffix brachas lahaka, and we wouldn't make it. But it's this idea that Tosfos has, that if you accidentally made a bracha, and now you realize you weren't supposed to make a bracha, you say Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vayeh. If you started a bracha, and you said Baruch Atah Hashem, the solution, if you haven't gone farther, is just to say Lamdeinu Chukecha, which is a pasuk in Mizmor Kuf Yud Tes. But if you said the bracha, you say Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vayeh. So the reason why we do it by tefillin is this Tosfos, but not because we hold it's really a suffix. If we held the really that it was a suffix, we wouldn't make the second bracha at all. Just since we mentioned it, the position of Sfardim is that if you spoke after putting on the shoyad, you interrupted, then you make al mitzvah tefillin. Ashkenazim hold, what the Gemara mentions the bracha al mitzvah tefillin. Ashkenazim hold that if you spoke after you put on the shoyad, you make both brachas on the shel rosh. L'haniyach again, and then al mitzvah tefillin. Because otherwise the Gemara wouldn't mean anything. The Gemara talks about, the Gemara says you make al mitzvah tefillin, and in sach you make al mitzvah tefillin. So
but Sfardim don't put on, and they'll make the second bracha.
Unless they interrupt it in between.
Otherwise, they don't make it at all.
Correct. They would never make them. A Sfardi has always been meticulous about not being massive between his tefillins, so he would not make a bracha. I'll tell you where a Sfardi would make it. Let's say he only had a shoyad right now. So if you only have a shoyad, you put on just a shoyad. It's the two separate mitzvahs. You do the one that you have. Same ditto if you had a shel rosh. So the Sfardi, I think if you only had a shel rosh, you might make l'haniach tefillin on that. I'm not 100% sure what the Sfardim would do. I don't remember what we would do. I need to learn this again. I mean, not that it comes up so often, but if you only had a shel yad, and for a Sfardi, you make only a tefillin, and I assume that when you got the shel rosh, an hour later, you put it on. Certainly, if you're still wearing the shel yad, you make al mitzvah tefillin. But anyway, our Ashkenazi practice is that we make both brachos, one on the shel yad, then one on the shel rosh, when we've done everything properly. But we say Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vayeh just as a nod to this other sheet, and it's based upon this last line in verses.
What about those who put on a few, put on two pairs of tefillin?
They put them at the same time. You've seen them do it? Theoretically, you should be able to, because normally, the people I know who do Rabbeinu Tam do not put them on the same time. Our tefillin are much bigger than their tefillin used to be. We just build them much, they're much more durable, and they're much bigger. But theoretically, tefillin were once small enough where you could put two on at a time. But I've never seen any... Right, there's a makom to put two on, and you can probably fit two on the kiboris as well, on the arm. I've never heard of somebody putting on the two at the same time. People I know who do Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, they put on Rashi tefillin for the beginning of davening and get to Kiddusha B'Sidva, and while everybody else is doing Kiddusha, they're already taking off one, putting on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin.
But those who put on one on top of the other, that's not Rabbeinu Tam, that's Rashi. But there's a story that they put on one on top of the other. No? We were in a plane at a minyan together. and we saw them put on one on top of the other.
I was sleeping.
No, you won't. We were both born with that. This is like 25 years ago.
Okay. All right. Anyway, any questions? Other questions about this? Okay. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
No problem.